You're doing well.
Doing well, Steve. How are you guys?
Doing great. Doing great.
Good.
I want to start with the formerly known as the Pittsburgh Blue Jays. how surprised were you that suddenly out of nowhere it ended?
I don't know if I was. Given what we had heard, 36 hours ago or so, I was more shocked that it got to the point that it did.
Okay.
Without somebody getting approval from the state, because we know how the state government has been pretty restrictive with things. They're trying to do their best in a lot of cases. And, I'll be honest, without getting political, I think they've done a lot of things right. And so I haven't been necessarily on board with a lot of the bashing of Governor Wolf and Dr. Levine that's gone on. But in this case in particular, what I didn't understand was that it got to the point that it did, that seemingly two Major League Baseball franchises, as well as Major League Baseball itself, the county executive in Allegheny County, Rich Fitzgerald, the mayor, Bill Peduto, for the city of Pittsburgh, had all seemingly looked at everything and said, hey, we can make this work. And then it finally got around to the state looking at it and saying, no, you guys put together a decent plan, but we don't think it's going to work for us. That's what surprised me. And I think the fact that it would have put maybe a handful of people back to work in Western Pennsylvania, that reward would have been worth what I think is a pretty well mitigated risk, because you're talking about some of the most commonly tested people in the world right now, and whether we're talking Blue Jays or visiting AL and NL East teams, and
right.
The fact that all of their livelihoods depend on them following the strictest of protocols right now. I felt like a suburban dad. I wasn't mad. I was just disappointed.
The way I looked at it was this. I think the state had a great technicality working for them. It's because it's a foreign-owned company. As a foreign-owned company, they could tell them they couldn't play her.
Yeah, and I'd be curious. You know, we discussed it a bit on our show this morning, although we didn't get too deep into this
yeah.
vein of thought. But I'd be curious to know, you know, was there any recourse for the city of Pittsburgh and Allegheny County? Because they would have made money off of this. You know, I imagine the Blue Jays would have paid the Sports and Exhibition Authority of Allegheny County rent. That being said, I don't think, because they're of the same political affiliation, I don't know if the mayor and the county executive had the appetite for going into that
sure,
scrum
right.
with the governor.
My understanding was that Toronto was so confident in this, they started asking their fans to make some donations to Pittsburgh area charities, which they did.
I hadn't heard that part, but it's fantastic. We know the players were being told, hey, you're going to be in Pittsburgh. Be prepared after they're headed to
St. Petersburg. St. Petersburg.
After the Tampa series, they were fully expecting to come to Pittsburgh. At the very least, after the Washington series, the second half of it, I guess, which all of them would have been played in Washington, they were fully prepared to come to Pittsburgh. And that's the most interesting part to me, that, again, it got that far down the road.
Yeah.
That Blue Jays players were being told, hey, be prepared to go to Pittsburgh, but that no one had gotten the sign-off from the Commonwealth.
We've had summer camp games. The last one was last night, untelevised, as they play. So I don't even know if they won. Did they win last night?
They did not. They did not. Winless in summer camp and 3-21, I think, in all spring training 1.0 and 2.0 games combined. So not exactly barnstorming around Florida and Eastern Ohio and Western PA.
You're so negative.
but
they start 0-0 Friday night.
True. And so, I think, you know, I've tried to find the silver lining in the clouds. Josh Bell, there's always an opportunity to look like the Josh Bell of the first half last year. Even with Gregory Polanco out, whether it's just a few more days or another week or so, we don't know. Depends how his coronavirus tests come back, and assuming he stays asymptomatic. that, you know, even with him out, Colin Moran has looked really good, whether we're talking about games that were played in Florida in February and March, or games that were played in Pittsburgh and Cleveland this week. And Musgrove and Williams, I think you can have some confidence in the fact that those guys are going to give you a decent outing more often than not.
I thought they looked good, the games I watched. I thought they looked pretty good.
The downside of all of that is that I get the sinking feeling that none of it matters if the bullpen can't figure itself out.
Right.
And even if Keone Kell is able to come back in the next week or two, what's left at the back end of the bullpen, either with Kella closing or without Kella closing, is a lot of, feels like MacGyver stuff, duct tape and chicken wire, and trying to piece things together from the sixth inning to the ninth if they have leads. And I think that's what a lot of people are worried about. Kyle Crick really didn't look good in these exhibition outings, giving up multiple home runs, or giving up a home run last night, I should say, and blocking the first two guys he faced the other night. Richard Rodriguez giving up home runs, all the kind of stuff that plagued those guys when they haven't been at their best as Pirates.
It's a real plus when you have multiple guys that are really good candidates to DH. I also think it's a minus when you have a lot of guys that are really great candidates to DH because they're not good enough in the field.
Right.
The Pirates have that. Josh Bell and Colin Moran are both great guys that you'd like to have be your DH, and you don't really want them in the field.
Well, and you could say the same for once he's healthy, Gregory Polanco.
Yeah,
too, for that
Polanco's
matter.
The same way, yeah. I was talking to somebody about Alec Bohn earlier this week, Dan Baker, who does the PA down there. And he said, what do you think of Alec Bohn as a player? Because I did enough games of Alec playing at Williamsport. I said, love his bat, great bat. I said, he's got to be a first baseman or a DH. I said, because as a third baseman, he's so big, he just can't bend down to get the balls quick enough, because the combination of trying to run there and then bend down to get it, he's too stiff to do that. But as a first baseman or DH, he's fine.
Yeah, and you could say a lot of the same things about Moran.
Kyle
Moran worked on it a lot this offseason. Yep. Derek Shelton's talked about it nonstop. But I think ultimately, once Ke'Bryan Hayes is up to speed and gets called up from Altoona, which I imagine will probably happen, a couple weeks in, Hayes will get maybe not the majority of starts at third, but he'll get time at third.
Sure.
And Moran will fill in. Will be a DH more often than not, I would think. When he's not DHing, maybe he gets some time at first. It's going to be a lot of juggling between the corners, those two corners, and right field. I get the feeling when you start to mix Polanco back in as well. I mean, it's not ideal, like you said, to not have one guy that you feel like you can plug in every single day at DH, because you've got multiple guys whose gloves you don't necessarily trust. But they're doing their best, I think, between, moving Moran around a little bit, putting him at DH, plugging Bell and Polanco in at DH from time to time, and then moving Cole Tucker around, giving him some looks in the outfield. They're doing their best, I think, and this is what I like about Derek Shelton, is I don't get the sense that his moving people around and trying to find position flexibility is born of as much desperation as it was from Clint Hurdle the last couple of years, as it is he's just genuinely interested in seeing what these guys can do. And that's what I think we keep forgetting, because we were just so excited to get baseball back and 60-game sprint and all that, is that for the Pirates this year, it really is, for the first calendar year, from the time Ben Cherington and Derek Shelton got their jobs all the way through to next winter, it's going to be about evaluation of the organization.
Sure,
what do they have, and what pieces do they want to keep moving forward? And of the pieces that they don't think they can keep moving forward, what can they get in return? When you talk about guys like Kella, if he comes back, Frazier, that's where they've got to start to consider the future. And I know that's not exciting in a division where it feels like four teams are in contention. You'd love them to be the fifth team. And in a 60-game sprint, you'd love to believe that anything's possible. But this really is. It's an extended evaluation period, really.
I don't know how much, if any, contact you've had with Derek Shelton, but I know we had Greg Brown on the show, and Greg Brown said he can't be any more down to earth. What kind of contact have you guys had with him? What's been at least your first impression of Derek Shelton, the guy? Because, we're not going to know about Derek Shelton, the manager, for a long time.
It's been tough just because of the situation, Steve, to be honest. We didn't get to go down to everything hit. The shutdown hit the week we were supposed to go down to Florida and spend a week down there at Lecon Park. So, you know, other than his introductory press conference and getting to meet him there in a couple of the Zoom meetings, you know, that they have now. But I will say this, you know, even via those limited interactions, I'll second what Brownie said, and that he's terrifically down to earth, very easy to speak to. Clint Hurdle, I think, was the right kind of guy for the Pirates when they hired him and to get them to the point that he got them in 2015. But I think very quickly, because of the style of manager and motivator that he is, those messages wore off. It's kind of like, I'll use a college football coach as an example. They can keep the same motivational and management structure in place for decades at times because, well, they've got new sets of fresh faces to talk to every 3 or 4 years. And Clint, it just wasn't getting through to some of the more veteran guys, especially. They weren't buying into it. Shelton is much more down to earth. It reminds me of more of a Mike Tomlin type of leader, in that he's going to talk to the guys like they're just regular guys like him, and he's a regular guy. And it's not going to be as much of the, you know, the motivational posters on the wall or the texts every morning to remind them of some sort of motivational speech or quote. It's going to be, hey, we love playing ball. Show up to the park. Let's work hard and play ball together. And that I think is good for a bunch of young guys, especially some of whom are trying to be, are trying to find their feet as leaders, you know, Josh Bell, Joe Musgrove, those kinds of guys who they don't need the manager to come in and police the clubhouse necessarily. It's up to them now to do that.
Yeah. Look, the Pirate, they'll start 0-0. 3-21 doesn't matter. 0-3 does. So 3-24 doesn't matter. Because suddenly they could get out of the gate, take 2 out of 3 from St. Louis, and be off and running. What do you think? I mean, look, everybody has to do this. What are your thoughts, though, on a 60-game sprint?
I think it should benefit teams that, I guess, don't, quote-unquote, know any better, and maybe you could classify the Pirates as a team like that.
True.
I think if they had the talent to match up with that, it would be great. If they got Josh Bell's first half and Brian Reynolds, July and August, and Kevin Newman's July and August, and they got all of that during the 60-game sprint, and you think about peak Trevor Williams and peak Joe Musgrove, if they got everybody's peak for 60 games, they'd be right there with the other four teams in the Central. I don't doubt it for a second in the mix. The problem for them, again, comes down to it's a house of cards in some cases, in that if you pull one card out, you get one less than optimal performance, and it feels like maybe the whole thing won't come tumbling down, but it'll fall to pieces enough that, again, in this division with four teams that I think are all legitimate contenders, they're not going to be able to hang. And I think that's a difficult thing, you know, going all the way back to 2012, 2013, this has been a division where you're going to have at least two, if not three teams to battle with. And this year there's four teams ahead of them.
Well, I find interesting is suddenly out of nowhere, Major League Baseball was talking about expanding. I mean, like in the last 24 hours from 10 to 16 postseason teams.
Yeah. And I don't know if they're going to be able to, I mean, as far as I understand it, they've got to get that agreed to by first pitch tonight. Between the Yankees and the Nats. I don't know if once the season actually begins, they can make that alteration. If they can get it done, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see expanded playoffs. I think combine the 60-game sprint with putting half the teams in Major League Baseball into some sort of playoff format and you know, hopefully getting it all done safely by Halloween, if they can pull that off, my gosh, give it to me. Yes, high-stakes baseball, as much high-stakes baseball as you can give us, absolutely, and that's what the 60-game sprint, and then if you add even more playoff teams into the mix, it's exactly what it would be.
And I think what we're seeing, with the exception of extra innings, okay, the extra inning thing is just for this year, but I think what we're seeing is a blueprint for what they want to do in the future with the game. Expanded playoffs,
yeah.
DH, and so would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, we may get to some sort of geographic realignment in the next CBA as well.
That's,
you know, there may be something learned about travel in a 162 game season on a 60 game scale. You know, these players, you know, I've my next door neighbor is actually his nephew is Dan Altavilla, who plays for the Mariners. So yeah. We talked to him before about the amount of travel the Mariners do. They're an extreme example, but every team would like to travel less, even the Yankees and Mets and Nationals and Phillies of the world. And I think if baseball is not far off from going to some sort of geographic realignment that does away with the designations of American League and National League, maybe even. And I agree. I think the extra inning, the runner on second rule, is not going to come into play permanently after this year. I could see it. You know, maybe it's an extreme situation. You get to the 15th inning, and it becomes something that gets put into place. But
sure.
I think that's you know, with all these things that are happening, this is why it's a great year to try so many different things. And I think that expanding the playoff field is part of experimenting for baseball. And they can experiment with as much as they want in a 60-game sprint, except for putting digital fans in the stands. I don't get that part. I can't buy into that one, Steve. the piped-in crowd noise at the ballpark, just a little bit of it, I could handle. It wasn't too terrible. I thought they did a good job with it at PNC Park in particular the other night, but computer animated fans in the stands? I don't know.
It was interesting when it comes to, just a final comment, then I'll let you go, Chris. When they first put the rule in about runner on second, they've done it in the New York Penn League the last 2 years. Well, it turns out opening night 2 years ago, it happens. So now, of course, I have to explain, okay, the person who made the last out in the previous innings on second. Right.
Right.
Okay. That happened here. Now, the way it worked was opening night was here. Then the second night of the season was up at Williamsport. They just alternated. Okay.
Okay.
So they go up to Williamsport. And in that game, they are tied at the end of nine. And they had to put the runner at second. And the fans down below the broadcast booth in Williamsport started chanting, "That's not baseball. That's not baseball." You can hear it like, okay.
Oh, man.
So nobody will have to deal with that. There aren't any fans to chant it. All right, so.
Maybe they'll pipe it in for our benefit, Steve.
I don't think Major League Baseball wants to do that, Chris.
Just a thought.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for your time. It's always great talking with you.
Oh, always great to catch up, Steve. Thanks so much. I'll talk again to you soon.